CliffCentral.com.
That's Kelvin Harris with My Way. Anthony Brooks is he's here with the World Cube Association. There are two official speed cubing competitions on the international circuit that are going to be held in South Africa in 2016. The Joburg competition, that happened yesterday, the 27th of November. And he's here to show us his stuff. Hey, man, how the hell are you? Nice to meet you.
Hey, thanks. Cool. I'm good.
Good, Anthony. This is your thing, huh? You're the Rubik's Cube champion.
Pretty much.
That's amazing.
Yeah, thanks.
I hate those things because they take me forever, and I eventually take them apart and just put it together. I break it and fix it again. But you're pretty good at these things.
Yeah, I have one here for you if you want to try and break or not break that.
Now, I noticed that this one, you obviously, it's a little more, like it's greased up. It's definitely, it feels like it's been lubricated. So it seems like you are able to move the pieces a lot more easily.
Exactly.
The one that I had, the last time I had one, was, it was stiff and you couldn't move it very easily. Know what I mean, Mubs?
Yeah, I know what you mean. That one looks
this one you can click into place.
Okay, so what is the formula to solving a Rubik's Cube? Is it math?
It's more strategy and logic.
Okay.
So it's not like I'm adding up equations in my head. It's more of like seeing pieces in certain positions and knowing, oh, I can move these over there without messing those up. And there's a system to it. So when people first try and solve the cube, you know, first thing everybody does is try and get one side, one color.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And then get another one and another one.
That's not how you should do it, right?
It's impossible to do it that way. So it's not just how you should, like, you just, there's no way of solving it. So people are kind of doomed from the start when you approach it with that system. So nowadays what people do who solve the Rubik's Cube is they go online, like on YouTube, and watch tutorials that teach you a step-by-step process.
Okay.
And how did you start doing this?
When I was in high school, one of my friends just showed me that basic system on a long road trip, and it's one of those things that, you know, everybody thinks the Rubik's Cube's impossible to solve. So when I did it the first time, I was like, all right, that's pretty sweet. It took like 5 minutes, and I tried it again. It took 4.5 minutes, and I just kept going. Now it takes about 7 seconds.
Well, what's amazing is, like, you're not the only one in your family who can do this, right?
No, I've taught my younger brothers, my mom here. She actually, yesterday at the Joburg competition, she set the Jamaican national record for solving a Rubik's Cube.
Jamaican?
Jamaican.
How do you get the Jamaican national record?
Well, in my mom's case, you're the only Jamaican competitor to ever enter one of these things.
You're from Jamaica? So is my grandmother. Come over here. Is this your mom? Hang on, let me talk to her. Just go to this microphone, Mom. Say hi to you. How are you?
Fine, thank you. How are you today?
Cool. So you're good at this Rubik's Cube stuff, too?
I can do it. I'm not fast like he is, but I can do it.
Wow. That's pretty cool. Where in Jamaica are you from?
From Kingston.
Awesome. God, I love that accent. Uh-huh. That's very nice. All right, so listen, you must be proud of him. He's breaking records everywhere, right?
Yeah, very proud of him. Glad to be here in South Africa with him.
Yeah, it's amazing. And well done to you for your record.
Oh, thank you.
Good job. All right, now, your brother is Texas's top-ranked speed cuber. Is that about right?
Maybe after me.
Oh, okay, so you're still the king of the family. All right, dude, I want to see this first of all. You can solve a cube one-handed. You've done it underwater in a single breath. And he can do the Rubik's Cube in less time than it takes Usain Bolt to run 100 meters.
No
which
way.
Is unreal. That's, so, like, what, 6.42 seconds?
So when you sleep, do you see the Rubik's Cube? I mean, has it become such a part of your life that you actually just see this all the time?
I don't see it when I sleep, but I daydream about it all the time. Like, I'm constantly, like, as we sit here, they're like positions and patterns in my head. I'm constantly learning new stuff to try and get half a second faster. So it takes a lot of effort.
How many of these cubes do you think you have in your possession?
Quite a few. That one that Gareth has is his now. So if you want to mix this one up for me, this is like the Porsche of Rubik's Cubes.
Right,
so I'll give you a demo.
Oh, should I mix it up?
Are there different kinds of Rubik's Cubes?
All different models.
And how many have you had to test to get the one that you like the most?
Yeah, a lot. I mean, over the years, basically there's a whole, like, almost like a dark web or of Rubik's Cubes where all of these products aren't official Rubik's brand cubes.
Yeah.
They're knockoffs from China that are specially designed. I can show you with mine in a moment, but they have tensions that you adjust to make it slower, faster. They're all different kinds of, like, gels and oils you can put in it to speed it up and
change
the feel.
Dude, this is unbelievable. It's like a whole different world.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of weird. When I got into it, I had no idea how big it was, but, you know, there are over 50,000 competitors worldwide.
Do you have people who sabotage each other by giving each other shitty Rubik's Cubes just before the championship?
You know, maybe off the books.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah. But it does happen.
It hasn't happened to me, but I might be a little more protective of my cubes when that comes around.
All right, now you said that the one way you can't solve it is by getting one side right first.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you're going to be moving that side around.
Yeah,
so it's
there's no way of like getting the other sides without screwing that one up. Yeah.
Okay. And I notice, yes, Ben?
Sorry, one last question. Is it ever like, is there a more difficult way of configuring it, or is it, no matter how I give this back to you, you're going to kill it in 6 seconds?
Well, there are definitely, like, harder and easier starting positions.
What's
but,
the worst starting position?
I can show you in a second. There's, like, a position that's really bad.
So when you go for official competitions, do they put it in the possible hardest setting?
In competition, we set it up to a completely random position.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and everybody gets the same mix-up.
You might luck out, though.
Exactly. That's what it takes to get a record these days. You need like, a good starting position, and then as you go through these steps, you can skip certain ones. And
okay.
Yeah.
Sounds fantastic. All right, listen, let's do this. Whenever you're ready, we'll do a little countdown. Mubs, you can count down from three, and then we'll go for it, all right?
All right.
Okay. And this is the official... This is the champion. He's already broken every record, so he doesn't have to prove a damn thing to us. But he's going to do this for fun anyway this morning. And Anthony Brooks, whenever Mabale gives you the cue, you can go for it.
Okay. Right. Am I also going to be doing the stopwatch thing?
Of course.
Okay. All right.
And
3, 2, 1, go.
Fast as can be. Look at that. Speed.
And it's done.
Oh my god.
11.81 seconds.
That's yeah, unreal. Yeah.
Wow. Show me that really difficult starting position so I can have a look at that.
Yeah, I will.
First, how he starts with a few small moves and then suddenly it's like Tasmanian Devil.
Right. So I'm warming up my fingers right now. Let me give you
do you ever get like a
through.
Hand massage afterwards because your hands are so sore from doing this?
I will always accept hand massages, yes. All right, so
what's the worst starting position? Because you're arranging it now.
All right, so if you take a look at what we have here, it's so every piece on the cube is in its correct location. But you see those kind of middles?
Yeah.
Not the center of the cube, but we call them edges.
Mm-hmm.
They're all flipped in place. So it's like, it's just a bad place to be.
This is very tough. So this would take you the longest to get back.
I know a trick to set it up, so
wow.
It's not a random position for me, but yeah.
Incredible.
It's just...
You've also, you did the Groovix cube, which is like the world's largest functioning Rubik's cube. How big is it?
So that's like this huge 40-foot by 40-foot Rubik's cube, like dangling from an atrium that you solve electronically.
Oh wow!
Yeah.
Oh.
And it moves it.
Yeah, it's so it doesn't physically turn the sides, but there are like colors and
okay.
You know it's like LED, right?
Okay.
But it's this huge crazy thing, and yeah, that was pretty sweet.
That's amazing. So where are you off to now?
Cape Town. I'm headed straight to the airport from here.
Are you going to have a little holiday?
Hopefully. I have a busy week coming up, and then there's another competition in Cape Town on Sunday.
Can you make money out of this?
There's some prizes at these competitions. The big ones have decent prize money, but there's definitely more money in like doing shows and stuff like that versus Rubik's Cube competitions.
Wow. I'm blown away by this. There's this whole universe of stuff we don't even know about, Mubs.
Yeah.
We got to get our shit together and start learning to do these Rubik's Cubes. How long did it take you to master it?
Well...
I mean, you're a master. Come on. Own it.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I'm a master, but
sure.
When you're first learning to solve the cube, it only takes a few hours to be able to solve the cube in several minutes. It takes years and years of practice to hone that and get it down to seconds.
Unbelievable, dude. Well done to you.
Thanks.
All right, and if people want to know more, if you got a like a website, if you got a social media profile you can go follow and all this kind of thing?
Yeah, definitely. So my website and all my social media is Brooks Cubing. So brookscubing.com, and if you want to find more info about the competition this weekend in Cape Town, you can go to speedcubes.co.za.
Thank you very much.
Awesome. Wow,
pleasure to meet you, dude.
Thanks,
you too. Nice to see you. There we go, everybody. Anthony Brooks and the World Cube Association. You heard there's an event going on in Cape Town. If you want to see this, it's very cool. And to watch him at work, it's intense.
Very fast, nimble fingers.
Beautiful. All right. Women impressed by this?
You'll have to ask my girlfriend. She's listening right now.
Dexterity. They could see that you can move your hands really quickly. There's a thing there.
Yeah, there's a lot of things there.
Yeah, well done. I'm impressed. Fantastic. All right, dude. Thanks very much. Anthony Brooks, everybody. 27 after 7. Cashmere Cat featuring Selena Gomez and Trust Nobody. Well, our own Cashmere Cat and Ari are coming on at 9 o'clock this morning on touchcentral.fm. Ben Karpinski on cliffcentral.com with his bounce show at 10 o'clock. Very exciting.
Big show today.
What's that?
Big show today.
Okay.
I've got a good rugby guest and lots of things to share.
You put someone in the awful position of having to talk about the Springboks.
Yeah, I did, actually. Last time this year, because as of next month, it's just review shows. We review 2016, and it'll be fun.
All right, very good. Flex, is Elson on the line? What's going on here?
I think we're having a problem with the system over here. It's not working.
It's his birthday. Elson's had the worst 2016. You know how we were talking the other day about how most people just can't wait for 2016 to be over?
Yeah.
And some people think that's ridiculous because every year could be good or bad depending on your attitude. I don't know. Maybe. You know what? If the ANC-NEC thing today goes a certain way...
Don't do that.
No, I mean, like, either way, there's going to be some action. This is not the end of the year yet. The year is not finished.
I don't want to get my hopes up. I don't want to get excited. I just don't want...
Well, I'll tell you what you can do in the meantime, if you don't mind, is give us some headlines.
Okay.
All right, Mabali Moloi's got some headlines for us. It is 7:30.
Yes, Gareth, you do talk about the ANC-NEC, and that's because of the meeting that started on Saturday and is expected to continue today, where President Jacob Zuma's fitness to hold office is being debated. You know, some people are saying things like the ANC's leadership is left hanging by a thread. The ANC, well, it began with a dramatic move when Tourism Minister Derek Honeycomb on Saturday tabled a motion of no confidence against the president. And it appears...
That takes some balls, huh?
It does, so publicly and to...
I heard that Derek Honeycomb had done this, and I thought, yo. And I always thought he was just like a backroom guy. He had a cabinet role, obviously, Minister of Tourism or whatever. But I thought, he's another one of those kind of guys who just hang around waiting for cater deployment. Clearly not. I am... well out of line, and in I think I deserve a whole bunch of humble pie.
Oh,
I called it wrong with Derek Honeycomb. So Derek Honeycomb, I'm sorry, you clearly have great big hangy wrinkly balls.
Oof. Okay. It would appear that calls for the president to resign have spread to the highest decision making body of the ANC. So they conclude that meeting today, or they continue that meeting today. And then I don't know. It's got everybody on edge, even myself, as you can tell. Over in America, U.S. President-elect Donald Trump, well, he said in a tweet yesterday that he won the popular vote from the November 8 election.
Mm-hmm.
He basically said that if you deduct the millions of people who voted illegally, a.k.a. those people voting for Hillary Clinton, he says that he won the popular vote. Yes, I know you can't believe that this is still ongoing, but the reason that it's ongoing is because votes are still being counted, And as it stands, Hillary Clinton's lead in the popular vote over Donald Trump has now passed the 2 million mark.
Wow.
And it is expected to grow to more than 2.5 million. And so Trump's response to that is that, nah, those were all illegal votes anyway.
Yeah, but you can't say that.
But he did.
That's nonsense. You can't just say that. You're making it up. I would really just like a little bit of truth. Just someone tell the truth. You know, these echo chambers are insane.
Now, Clinton's legal team on Saturday, they said that they had agreed to participate in a recount of votes mm-hmm. in one of the states. And this is after the state's election board approved the effort, which was requested by the leader of the Green Party, Jill Stein. So she's the one who's been pushing for these recounts.
Okay.
And after they count California, because that's still being tallied, they suspect, as I mentioned, that Clinton's popular vote numbers will have reached at least 2.5 million that he leads Trump by. But it's too late.
That's not how it works.
Said and done.
Trump is stupid for saying that all these people who voted were illegal.
Yeah, he definitely said that they were illegal votes.
That's stupid. That's ridiculous. But it's just as ridiculous to imagine that because Hillary got more of the popular vote, she's going to somehow come back out of nowhere and reclaim the presidency. It's outrageous. There is a system in America that has worked for every other presidential election up to now. It's called the Electoral College, and it works in a specific way. The reason it was instituted was because the Founding Fathers, the guys who wrote the Constitution, decided it was a good idea for all states to have representation at some level, and for all states to be equally weighted. So you do have a strange system where you have, you know, electors, and these people are essentially representative of the people who vote in their various districts and municipalities. Now, you could say that's a flawed system and that the popular vote should win, but that's not how America works. It is a republic. It's not a democracy. There's a difference. A republic is where you have representatives elected to office, to work on behalf of people who have voted in democratic elections, usually democratic. In a democracy, it's a majority wins, minorities also get representation. But it's a different system. So this is politics. If you don't understand it, Donald, be quiet. And Hillary supporters, shut up, you've lost. MoveOn.org.
Very difficult for people to do that.
Yeah.
MoveOn.org.
Clearly.
Yeah. All right, those are your headlines.
All right. I get the message. I know, you want me to move on. All right, how about you, Ben? What do you got for us in the sport?
Well, Gareth, we've got the worst ever Springbok season, but it has come to an end. Although Alistair Kuss is not done for the year. He's going to have a coaching endowment with the Super Rugby coaches. That'll take place sometime mid-December. I say sometime mid-December because, well, who really cares? Doesn't mean anything because SARU's structures aren't going to change. So if when everyone thinks that the Boks have hit rock bottom, well, I disagree. Because they're not just suddenly going to turn around. It's like watching them play terrible rugby for 75 minutes and think, oh, wait, if they just score a try here. But they haven't shown any ability to score a try in 75 minutes. What makes you think they're going to suddenly get it at the end? The same applies here with SA Rugby turning their stuff around. They've got a useless, horrible bunch of old, suited just layabouts basically running the show, and they're not going to exactly make anything dynamic here. They're going to use hot big words and hot air, but ultimately, yeah, this could go on for a while. New Zealand beat France 24-19, Ireland beat Australia 27-14, and England beat Argentina 27-14. Sorry, I said that twice.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm losing it. Ireland 27-24 yes. against Australia.
Yes, you're losing it.
Yeah, I am. Jeepers, it's getting so bad. Wade Phinekoke was the big winner at the Sports Awards, obviously, last night. He was the Sports Star of the Year, the Sports Man of the Year.
Terrible Sports Costas, Awards, by the way.
Costas Minya Sports Woman of the Year.
While someone was making a speech, I saw someone actually get up and walk across the shot while carrying a podium. They carried a podium. You just see this shadow figure walk across the middle of the screen and obscure the people who are meant to be on camera.
It looked like some disused auditorium in the Free State somewhere with like terrible. A 200-person capacity.
And there was a lot of nothing happening.
Yeah.
Like there was a lot of time where there would, you just had a camera on the stage and nothing was happening. There was no one on the stage. Not a comedian. Not a singer. Nothing. It was just an empty stage with the lights not even moving. Just standing still.
Well, the things that weren't standing still, the English Premier League was very entertaining of the weekend. Swansea Crystal Palace in the game of the weekend. 5-4 ended for the Welsh. But yeah, Man United 1, West Ham 1. That now means that after 13 games, Jose Mourinho has a worse record than both David Moyes and Louis van Gaal. He's been sent to the stands again last night for kicking a water bottle, which you can't do. But yeah, 13 games, 20 points, that's all he's got. So tough times there. The fourth home draw in a row. And you just can't do this when you're a top team. See, really good teams like Chelsea, Arsenal, Liverpool, they all won at home. Man City also won this weekend. Leicester, they drew 2-2 at Middlesbrough. Telkom Knockout Cup action. It'll be Suwon United versus Cape Town City December the 10th. That game will take place in the PSL Highlands Park, where they took an absolute hammering from Sundowns 5-0. Unfortunately for the Proteas, they could not win three in a row. They lost by 7 wickets to the Aussies. The Aussies now believe they're the greatest team in the world again, which means that Australia are basically becoming like England. Mostly crap, but really do overhype their own achievements. India versus England. Speaking of England, India now 56 runs ahead. They were doing so well, but now India are kicking on. And again, it's the kind of pitch that's going to deteriorate towards the end. So if India can get a big lead here, then, well, they'll be in a handy position. Even the fact that they are batting fourth. And New Zealand are looking very strong against Pakistan in their second test. Motorsports, Lewis Hamilton did his absolute best to try and manufacture a fourth place for his teammate Nico Rosberg, but Rosberg held on to second. Hamilton won the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix, so it's his 10th win of the season. Rosberg won 9, but he didn't have any mechanical failure, unlike Hamilton, who now believes that he was just jinxed and people were working against him. Matters not. Rosberg is the 2016 world champion. And the 2016 World Cup of Golf champions, that is Denmark. They did bloody well against everyone else, and no one really expected it, but they were unanimous winners down in Australia. That's it for your sport today.
Australia. All right. There are a lot of things we've got to get to. Rich Mulholland's coming in a moment. We're also going to get our Adidas blog boosts into the next 15 minutes or so. So if you want to hear about that, if you are a sports blogger, this could be the thing that you want to know about. This could be the thing that changes your life. In fact, Ben knows all about it because he was part of the recordings. So Adidas and Touch Central are running a 6-part podcast series with different sports bloggers in South Africa. The 6 bloggers who were talking to Aria Kelman and Ben Karpinski talked about starting a sports blog, why sports blogging is important, creating content that kicks, leveraging social media for sports blogging, creating blogging networks to improve your net worth, and of course, monetizing your blog. This week, they feature 23-year-old Atlehang Mosimanekosi, who talks about creating sports content that kicks. Do you want to hear it?
Mm. Yes, please.
All right, take a listen. Download the Touch Central app, from Google Play Store or iTunes Store. Touch Central FM. Touch Central and Adidas. Creating the new.
It's about creating the new and starting an awesome sports blog and monetizing it and all of that. This is what we're discussing in our series of conversations around Adidas and boosting your blog and starting a blog. Ben Karpinski is hanging out. He's been making some amazing content all day today. I'm glad you could take time out of your schedule.
Thanks, Ari. It's such a great initiative, this, and it's been so great to see how it's been developing.
Speaking of content, that's what we're discussing today, how to create sports content that kicks. A guy that's doing an amazing job of that is Atlehang from thatindierunner.com. Atlehang, you're making this amazing content. It's punching above its weight. It's cutting through the clutter. What would you say are some of your secrets to success in doing this?
Keep it simple. You know, I know when I'm posting somebody what I'm looking for in them because I scroll through Instagram and I pick runners. So immediately from that, I know what special property that runner has that will appeal to my audience.
Yeah, spot on. I think it's something you learn as you go along with the blogging process. If you can really sort of concentrate your efforts on what you really want to do, that's how you really get your content to really kick, as they say.
How do you sort of, you know, not over-edit or become self-indulgent with the post, and how do you keep objective with what you're putting out?
Okay, I write my post once, and then I read it over, and I edit it a second time, but then I leave it at that because at that moment when I'm typing, I'm really typing what I'm feeling. I do not blog when I don't feel like it, and that's how I keep it simple.
There's just a fantastic insight because a lot of people feel they must do something in a certain way. What Atlehang has done is he's found his voice, clearly, and he knows exactly what his content says about him. And when you do that, there's a lot of integrity because people can go onto the site because they like what he does around running. Mm. And the fact is he's staying consistent because he's just doing that, and it's the beauty of blogging.
Some quick tips on how to find your voice and your unique space in the blogosphere.
First of all, you need to identify the market that you're going to, and then you need to look at your competitors. And you spend some time on their blogs, reading what they have done, their social media, and from that you find what differentiates you from them to pull a specific audience to your blog.
Yeah, it's a beautiful part of the whole blogging process, that exactly what you said. And you keep learning, you get better just on those little guidelines.
Let's land this plane, creating sports content that kicks. What are some of the powerful pieces of wisdom you can give in terms of people being able to do that?
Find your market, find your niche market, and then also use social media a lot, because that's where you actually interact and engage with your audience and create a community like I have done with the Run Revolution community.
I think also just immersing yourself in your world, okay, whether it be running, whether it be football, whatever it is, and take pride in the fact that you're your own editor. If it doesn't look, sound, or feel good to you, there's not a chance it's going to be anything to your audience.
That's how you create sports content and kicks. That kicks. That's Ben Karpinski there from thebounce.co.za and Atle Khang from thatindierunner.com.
Touch Central and Adidas, creating the new.
Jidenna and a little bit more. All right, it's Monday, which means everybody hates, I don't know why, but everybody hates Mondays. That maybe they don't have things to do. I don't know, maybe people have too much to do on a Monday. But it is ridiculous.
Monday is a gateway to Friday. Never forget that.
If you don't have your Monday, you don't have a Friday. That's how it works. So on a Monday, in order to make us feel better about the world, we bring in someone who gives us a reality check. Someone who bullshit will not cling to. Someone who is able to shirk nonsense like the rest of us shirk responsibility. He is Rich Mulholland. Do you want your theme music? You like your theme music, huh? That bagpipes. You want that, right?
Hello, buddy, Scotland.
All right. Should we do it?
Oh, I mean, may as well now. Hello, everybody, and welcome to a beautiful all Scottish right. morning.
I notice a lot of new tattoos going on.
Yeah, I'm just trying to get my sleeves sorted out. I feel like I'm looking too corporate, so I want to change that up a bit.
All right. Well, yeah. I don't think you've ever looked corporate.
Yeah.
You know, there's no corporation in the world that would hire you because of the way you look.
I think there's no corporation. In fact, that's a very good topic, very good segue, because it leads right into what I'm talking about today. Uh-huh. There's no corporation in the world that would hire me, period, and probably because of how I'm educated. But very first of all,
are you educated?
Well, no, I mean, I got my trick. One guy did worse than me at school, and the guy who did worse than him failed.
All right.
The only difference is that I don't make the mistake in believing that your education and your schooling go hand in hand. Not to say that school was bad, but I've never stopped learning.
Or to say, which a lot of people don't seem to understand, that even people who are uneducated can be extraordinarily intelligent. And that if you read a lot and you are interested and you're curious in the world, then you will always be able to find the information that you require to satisfy that curiosity. That's the mark of intelligence.
For sure. And I think for me, the thing is not about being uneducated then, it's that you're uncertified. And that separation between education and certification is important.
Mm-hmm.
Just quickly, because I saw it on the way in here, congratulations, man, on your final Idols.
Thank you.
I saw the photograph and I thought, wow. I mean, I looked back, it was you, Randall, and Dave, and I thought it was quite an emotional.
How cool is that?
Yeah, I was right. Especially Randall's haircut. He looked like he had that something about Mary hair gel thing going on. That was pretty cool. But it was a really nice photograph,
I
thought it was excellent. So congratulations. What an amazing.
Yeah, I had a good show last night. It was fun. I'm very glad that Norma won. It's. She's a very talented singer, and I'm just happy to kind of leave it on a high.
Yeah, dude. Well done. I told you before, Thanks. That's your ninja skill. Okay, so this is a topic I've been wanting to talk about for a while, and it's never quite come up. I want to challenge Fees Must Fall.
Yeah.
I don't know, it may sound like I'm a bit late to the party, but I want to rally the troops here. Okay, and I'm happy to get into this debate, by the way, with anyone. Anyone who thinks I'm wrong, find me on Twitter or Facebook or whatever, at Rich Mulholland. I'm really, really happy to debate this.
Okay.
So we're arguing Fees Must Fall, and I think that we're missing the idea of the victory condition. The victory condition isn't to have cheaper education. The victory condition of education is to make you more hireable, to get a better job, Right? That's what ultimately we're trying to do, get a better job so we can build a better lifestyle for our families. Now, what's happening here is that we're upset because education is seemingly getting more and more and more expensive, and it is because we're having to do it longer and longer to be certified for longer.
Mm-hmm.
And we're fighting against that. But I think we're fighting the wrong problem here. So, you know that quote that says you need a 3/4-inch drill bit, but what you actually need is a 3/4-inch hole. Or more importantly, you need to hang a picture in the wall. I think that's what's happening here. You see, the reason we need to get educated for so long is due to greedy universities wanting to keep you on for longer, colluding with lazy HR departments of large corporations. Because they're saying, now, it used to be that if you had a very good matric, you could get a job, or you could become an apprentice. Then it was, okay, well, you have to have a degree. And then it's now you have to have a master's degree in something. You've got to stay longer, because every group of people, the bar just raises higher. Hmm. So if you want to get that good job, you have to be more educated than the next guy. And what we're creating is this weird thing where we're having to educate for longer and longer and longer and longer in order to get the same jobs, because HR is able to hire on that criteria. Now you've got to have your MBA, or now you've got to have your master's. And this is the problem. I think the real fight we should be doing is not on dropping the fees of education, but actually dropping the amount. And I think we need to shift the blame here from not the public sector and to pay for university or even the universities, but actually rather to the corporations. Because it's the corporations that are driving the bar higher that require us to study for longer for these unreasonable amount of times.
Mm.
Now, there's a problem. My father, when he had a job, he got this. He went and he studied. He got a job, and throughout his career, what happened is he was on this curve of relevance and experience. His information was relevant, and he had more and more experience in it. Therefore, he was more and more hireable. Now, what happens is as we gain more experience, instead of gaining impact, we actually fall off a relevance curve. So our education is relevant for less long. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes total sense.
So what's happening is we're making people study for longer in order to have that degree be relevant for less time. What we need to do is change that entire thing up. What we need to do is we need to, if it was my dream, it would be that you go after school and you do a degree that takes 1 to 2 years. Now, I understand if you're a doctor or a lawyer, there's probably certain careers that may require longer. I'm totally behind that. But for the most part, for you, it's kind of more generic standard business degrees and things. Get them out there quicker. The universities must it's even free, but they tithe you. So, okay, I'm happy to educate you for these 2 years for free, but then you're going to give me a percentage of your salary for the rest of your life. So the good universities will command this. However, we're going to re-educate you for 2 to 3 months a year, every year for the rest of your career.
So we'll keep you fresh.
So we'll keep you fresh, and that's what you're paying for. And the businesses need to understand that this is the model. And so, yes, staff members will be leaving for 2 to 3 months a year to educate. I don't think this is a bad thing. First of all, we know this works because maternity leave works, right?
Yes.
So we understand that people can leave and things can happen, and now paternity leave works. But now what we're doing is you're getting your staff back with – now your people who have the most experience also have the newest knowledge.
Right.
And the idea of fees must fall – It's quite absurd to me, because all we're fighting for is we're fighting to make a system designed to actually put you down cheaper.
Yeah.
And we need to evolve that conversation. People need to realize, what are we actually fighting for? And what we're fighting for is to build a better life for ourselves and our families.
How do you hire people? I mean, this is all good in theory, but, you know, you run your own business. You hire people.
Right, but I want multiple people.
Okay, so, what are the criteria you look for?
Okay, so we hire, this depends on the different sites, right? So we hire strategists who are going to be working on what is the CEO's content that he wants to deliver and how can we plan that. So it's a very thinky job. And we hire designers who are people, but in our mind, they are not artists. They're people who are trying to consider what a message somebody's trying to say and how to best visually represent that.
Okay, but so we you hire, don't look for qualifications.
No, never, 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 right? So I'll look at somebody's book, first of all. If they are say, in the design side, their qualification is so completely and utterly irrelevant to me. It's absolutely 100% unhelpful. If I have a person who's got a great qualification in A+, and I've got somebody else who has matric and can just design the ass out of something, there's just never any doubt, right, that person gets a job. Right. That's a talent job. And then on the other side of the business, it's attitude and how they field certain questions in the interview. It's their ability to think on their feet and handle themselves. And funny enough, that's not a teachable asset. However, what I would love them, I would love that if there was a thing that you could do for a year after school, for 2 years after school, that was designed purely, and it was run by the top universities, and it was amazing, and it was designed purely to tell you what your natural aptitude is. Aptitude plus interest. So that when the guy comes to see me, it actually says, shit, this guy is a visual thinker that has a complete aptitude for problem solving, for things like this. Everything else I'll teach you. But if you have the raw material and the desire, and we know that because we've got some scientific process of finding that, I'll teach you everything you need to know, and it will be easy for both of us. But if you come in saying, oh, I want to work with you guys because you have a fireman's pole and a treehouse, and it looks really, really cool, but it turns out your aptitude is for more advertising and marketing and things like that, then I'll say to you, hey, man, look, you're not going to love what we're doing. You're going to find what we're doing very boring. We're not about creative. We're about creative problem solving. So you're going to hate this. You should go to an ad agency. And then let them teach you on the go.
Do you know what your aptitude might have been if you'd done a test like that?
Yeah, well, I think I realized I'm naturally good at selling stuff. If you'd put me through a job and aptitude, things like that, I probably should be some sort of salesman.
Yeah.
The only thing is I'm very good at, and I think this is a mistake we make, I'm very good at selling, but I'm not good at sales. So I'm very good if you put me in the room of making a deal happen. Where I'm not great is doing all the dog work that real salesmen know how to do. Sales is a science, and there's a whole bunch of steps before you get to be good in the room. And I'm only the final guy at the end of the... And I'm really bad at the rest of it, but I would have probably worked harder at it.
I remember my mother took me to the Human Sciences Research Council, and she said, do this aptitude test, because I didn't know what I wanted to do after matric. Well, during matric. I knew that the gap year was not on the table. My parents are like, we are not funding you for a year to fuck around. So go to university and do your thing, but you've got to study something that's useful to you, something that, you know, you'll end up being interested in. And it came up with architecture as the number one, and I should have probably done that. But I ended up doing law, which I later on dropped out of. And I keep thinking, like, if I'd paid more attention to the aptitude test, I didn't even look at what was number two, three, or four. But law wasn't in there.
Yeah, the problem with aptitude tests in the current form is they don't map interest with ability. So aptitude is what you could be good at.
Right.
I want to do this thing
called... You could be very interested in something, but you could be terrible at it.
100%.
Yeah.
I want to do this thing called the Freshman Foundation, and the idea is that after kids leave school, they come to me for a year. Their parents pay us 1 year of education. Okay? And for that 1 year, they're actually going to get their money back, because I'm going to go to a different company. I'm going to come to you and say, hey, man, I'm going to send a guy. He's going to work for you for a month in the station. You can say, cool. Then somebody's going to come to me, and then someone's going to go to one of my banking clients. And for 10 months of the year, these students are going to do 10 different jobs, and in those jobs, they're going to experience multiple different spheres. They're going to be paid a small fee, like an intern fee, but enough to get by. But like a waitering job, they'll basically end up with that kind of fee at the end of the year. And at the end of that year, they can decide, sure, I really loved banking, or I really loved the radio station, or I really love whatever the case may be. And then they can pursue that. And then they'll come to you and they'll say, Gareth, this is absolutely what I want to do. To make me the most hireable to you, what would you like me to study next year? Now, some people might turn around and say, you know what, we loved your energy, and we'll bring you in and we'll put you through some courses and stuff and get you started. And others might say, we'll go and study this and then come back to us in 3 or 4 years. And you could say to them, well, would you mind if I stay in touch and you could mentor me throughout those 3 or 4 years? And the guy would say, absolutely. And I guarantee you, 4 years later, you're walking into a great job. Okay, if you can continue that mentorship. But then we're studying what we know. The concept of the gap year is so completely broken, because all it's doing is it's just a chasm. It's not helpful. It's a chasm that's between you and what you want to do. And what happens is this makes most people have accidental careers, because they go overseas and they travel, and then they meet a friend who has a job at an architecture firm.
Mm-hmm.
So they say, oh, listen, you can help out being an admin clerk at an architecture firm. And then they have a great attitude, and then they do that, and then they end up staying there. And then, you know, 10 years later, they find out they're that, and they haven't explored anything.
And before they know what's going on, that's their thing.
Yeah. And then
it's a mismatch.
The other problem with the education thing is that the longer you spend on it, the more invested you are, the less likely you are to tap out. So we study, how long is architecture?
Oh, I don't know.
But it's a long one, eh?
It's like about 5 years.
5 years. Here's the funny thing. My sister's an architect. She's licensed to build up to 10 stories. Now, because she does residential, she's never had to do a 10-story house. She's done a 3-month drafting course. That's it.
Yeah.
A 3-month drafting course, and everything else was certifications and exams she's written throughout the experience she's had. She had such a head start. Because if she came out of her drafting school at the same day that... She went into a drafting 3-month course the same day that somebody went into the architecture course. My sister has 4 years and 9 months of experience and clients and reputation and all of these things at the time that the architect student leaves and is starting as an intern.
Nothing.
They can never catch her. Through the compounding interest of experience, they can never, ever catch it. Now, for sure, the 1% or 2% are going to go out and do skyscrapers in their Burj Hotel and stuff like that. It's fantastic. But for the most part, my sister's drafting and certification, later certification, has put her in a far better stead, to the point that now she's 3 years older than me, semi-retired, works when she wants to, turns down almost everything because she doesn't need to.
Yeah, you see, and this is where Fees Must Fall get it wrong. They're going about it the wrong way. They're looking at the immediate thing rather than the end result. Right. And what you should be looking at is the job and whether or not you're hireable.
The victory condition, the end game. That's what they've got to be pushing for, is what are we actually trying to achieve here and what are the real barriers in the way? And what you'll find is the barrier, the biggest single barrier, is that corporate South Africa is lazy and demands all these many years of education. Not that education is expensive, because let's face it, these institutions aren't going to run themselves. Now, they are expensive and probably more than they need to be, but that's not the real problem. And this victory condition thing, it brings it right back to what you were saying when I was writing here about America being a republic. You know, again, and I know I've been a crack record in this, but if you're playing Monopoly and one player has all the money at the end of the game, and then the other player turns and says, "But dude, I've got most of the buildings." And they say, "Yeah, but that's not the game we're playing. If we had to get the most buildings, we'd have played differently." That's the electoral college argument and popular. I mean, it's just, I'm not willing to have this conversation. This is not a conversation of opinion. This is simply, if you believe there's a problem with a popular vote and you talk about that popular vote, you simply don't understand the criteria of the game. Hillary played the wrong game, and then, she didn't. She actually tried to play the right game and lost. Mm. I think that's what we need to be mindful of. She knew what she was getting into. Anyway, that's a whole thing. But this idea of define, understand what your victory condition is and work towards that, and don't let the bullshit get in the way. Fees Must Fall is the cure for the wrong disease.
There we go.
Cool.
Sure. Hard stuff. Thank you, Rich.
This is me until February, I'm afraid, guys. Unless
we're not going to see you until February?
Some dial-in. I'm traveling. I'm all over the world. But if we can Skype in or something, that'd be
right.
All right. But
we
otherwise, we'll make a plan.
Yeah, we'll Skype in and stuff.
Fantastic.
People like hearing from you.
Have a good one. All cheers, right, guys.
Very nice to see you. Thanks. Rich Mulholland, The Reality Check. It's 8 o'clock. CliffCentral.com.